I'm here with Farhad from Noura.
Yep.
So tell me, who are Noura and what are you working on at the moment?
So Noura is an Australian company that makes the Noura phone, which is our first product. And Noura phones create personalized sound mm-hmm. for every single person. So the idea of personalized sound is that everyone hears differently. And we want to make sure that everyone basically enjoys the music as much as the artist really intended for them to enjoy. So, and because everyone hears differently, all we're trying to do is to compensate for the different hearings that are out there.
Okay.
So everyone understands the depth of the music.
I mean, so I'm currently having some hearing problems, but I always have done. Can you take things to that level, like actually helping people who have reduced hearing capabilities or anything like that? Or
So Noura phones will run a really quick test,
mm-hmm.
and it's an automatic test that will understand everyone's hearing. And to answer your question shortly, they can compensate for some hearing loss, but it really depends how much damage has been done.
Yeah.
So if up to some percentage, they would be able to sort of correct for that. But then after that, if you really need some medical attention, there's nothing we can do about it.
So I'd be interested, as an ex-musician myself, but not in a particularly high-precision genre, but I'm interested to know, like, what is enhancing? I mean, we've had stereos for a long time that boost signals here and things like that, and sometimes it can end up making especially older music sound a little strange or not quite right or possibly too polished sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you... I'm not necessarily asking you to give away your IP, but what are you actually doing to the music? Are you boosting certain signals? Are you what does personalization mean versus kind of enhancing?
Sure. So basically every time a signal enters your ear, it goes through your ear canal, your eardrum, and then there are three little bones that connects it to the cochlear, and that's where the sound signal is changed into an electrical signal and sends to your brain. At the same time, your cochlear produces a very tiny sound that comes all the way back out of your ear. And we are able to pick up that tiny sound. That tiny sound has all the information about your cochlear, your sensitivity, your eardrums, the physics of the different bones, and your ear canal.
Mm-hmm.
So all we are trying to do is to try and maximize the information that goes from the source of the sound, which is whatever you're listening to your brain. So we're not trying to change the music. We're not enhancing any features. All we are trying to do is to give your brain more information about the music. And that's why you would have a better feeling and you would enjoy it more, because your brain is receiving more information.
Still, I sort of understand what you're saying, but it sounds hard to really... I'm actually almost interested in how you sell this to people, because it seems like something that's hard to understand quite what this means and quite what effect this will have.
So the science behind it is basically what is used for newborn babies to test their hearing, because you cannot ask a newborn baby whether they hear something or not.
Yeah.
But you are still able to measure it, and that is called, two different methods. One of them is called autoacoustic emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically what happens, that you send some signals in, you listen to what comes out, and then you realize how they're hearing. So we do that for the music. So when you start using the Noura phones, they will run a quick test. And in that test, they just play some sound. And based on the response that they get, they would understand how you hear music.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would adjust the music from then on to your hearing.
What do you adjust, though? Are you adjusting
all the different frequencies for every single person.
Yeah.
But it's different for every single person. It's like giving everyone a pair. personalized equalization.
Yeah. And does it change depending on surrounding, if I'm on a plane or in a quiet room, or does it only ever change once?
Yeah, so the neurophones, as soon as you put them on, they have double-layered passive noise isolation. Mm-hmm. So it creates a really quiet environment. But we recommend that you do the test not in a noisy environment, because, yes, of course, it does have effects on the way the test is run.
But can I have different profiles, or...?
Sorry, what do you mean by having different...
Well, like, for example, when I'm on an aeroplane, I'm in a very different scenario. My ears are probably different as well because of the air pressure and things like that, for example.
Yeah, yeah, of course you can have, like, even, like, you know, in a... there's some research going on that, like, you know, drinking different things might have aspects, unlike, you know, the way that you hear things.
Yeah.
So, of course, you would have different hearing profiles, but the difference between them wouldn't be much. And again, your hearing profile, however, is different. It would be different from someone else.
Yeah, cool.
So that difference is way more distinctive than your changes of your hearing.
But it's not a one-off setup. I can redo the test.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you can redo the test, and the headphones also, like, you can store three different setups.
Cool. So how did you get here? When was the idea first had, and why, and what problem was trying to be solved?
So the idea started 2 years ago with Kyle Slater and Luke Campbell. So Kyle and Luke were both doing their PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle was doing his PhD in electrical engineering, and Luke was starting to become an ENT surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's how they, like, Luke knew about the science behind it, and Kyle basically sort of, I think, proposed the idea of using this for a consumer electronic device, and that's how, like, they work closely together to make the neurophones.
And then you went to Kickstarter, I think?
Yes. So it was first through, like, a couple of accelerator programs.
Yeah, okay.
And then Kickstarter.
Okay. And the Kickstarter was moderately successful, I think?
I would say it was really highly successful. Okay. It was the most funded Australian Kickstarter in the history of Kickstarter in Australia.
What did that equal?
Probably $1.8 million.
US or Australian?
US.
Okay. And, I mean, I remember when I was living here that I don't think Kickstarter was even available when I was living here.
So
we had the local ones like Possible and things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
But what's it like running a Kickstarter from Australia in terms of, especially, I mean, I guess firstly, how much of your backers were local versus international, and sort of trying to keep in touch with the community in a very unsociable time zone and things like that?
Yeah, so actually our Kickstarter is a very international, like, we have a really international backer community, almost from all over the world, like, you know, like, really small and big countries from everywhere, like, from Africa, Southeast Asia, Middle East, a lot of European countries, and of course North America and Australia are our biggest backers. Community, which you would assume.
Yeah.
Like, most of our backers are, like, in terms of the number of the backers, they're from North America.
Yeah, of course.
And then, but if you want to look at it percentage-wise based on the population of the countries, Australia is our strongest backer, which is something expected.
No, it's great. When did that finish? When did that campaign finish?
August last year.
Okay. And what... Because it's always been an interesting thing with Kickstarters. Like, I think there's some people who enter a Kickstarter thinking that, like, they can literally just go in with nothing and make everything. And then you realise quite quickly that you almost have to use it as a kind of refund, possibly some of the costs you've already done, because trying to kickstart with nothing is very hard to convince people. So what had you created already before the Kickstarter?
So as I said, we were involved, Neura was involved in a couple of accelerator programs. Mm-hmm. So we already had prototypes when we started the Kickstarter, but we didn't have a final product, and we also didn't have, we weren't into, like, you know, exactly how to manufacture product. So that those are those cost a lot.
I know, well,
and is, that's why Kickstarter really helps.
I think it's the one of the founders of Hacks, I think, that I saw doing this presentation. I can't quite remember. It was a hardware accelerator out of the US somewhere.
Yeah. And we were actually in Hacks, but in Shenzhen.
I think it was Hacks. Maybe it was maybe Hardware Alley or. Mm-hmm. That's another one. I can't remember, but I think the people behind both those programs would say exactly the same thing, that hardware is hard.
It's really hard.
And it's incredibly difficult to to prototype, to iterate. Like software, you can make changes in an afternoon and push them live, and if it doesn't work, you just roll it back and off you go. But hardware, you know, if you send something and it comes back not quite right, you then have to figure that out. You might have to get on a plane to China. I'm assuming, as in probably 90% of hardware products you're making in China, and then you have to keep going backwards and forwards and find intermediaries to help you, and etc. I mean, what were some of your, I guess, especially considering you're working on a very precision product, what were some of your biggest struggles during that whole process?
Well, we figured out exactly as you said, that if you want to, because Neurophone are a very delicate and complex product. So, and we figured out that if you want to change anything, we definitely need to manufacture these in China.
Yep.
But if you're not based in China, then every time you want to go, like, you know, from Melbourne to China and then come back, it's going to be, first of all, it's going to be expensive. Mm. And second of all, it's not going to go as quickly as we want. So we basically send a lot of our engineering team to be based in Shenzhen.
Okay.
And we develop everything there with our with the help of our manufacturing.
Okay. Are they still there or are they back?
Right. There's still, like, part of the team is still there.
Yeah.
And because of the quality control of the Neurophones, it's, like, really high.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that anything that comes out of the factory is up to Neuro standards, okay. And our standards are pretty high.
And how many have you manufactured so far?
I cannot give you the exact number of, like, how many we have manufactured, but we have 8,000 backers from Kickstarter. Okay. And by the end of this year, we would have been able to deliver and fulfill all of those.
Okay. And were you already have an online store?
Yes.
And are you hoping to distribute wider than that, or are you happy with kind of the potential of just having your own private store?
So we do have an online store, but we ship globally. So we basically sell it everywhere in the world.
Do you want to distribute through Amazon or JB Hi-Fi or local equivalents?
For now, the retail policy and strategy is that Neurophones need a lot of care, and people need to understand them on how they're used. And if you want to go to retail, then you're going to get the attention that they need to. So our idea is that we would have our own pop-up stores around the world.
Yeah.
And we would be educating our customers. Also, the people who have bought Neurophones and will buy Neurophones, we're sure would fall in love with them and would go around and show them to their friends. So that's the other way of educating the population about it.
It's interesting you say that, because is this a problem in itself, in that you have a product that has a very particular aim and it does require some... You know, it's not just a pair of headphones that you just put on your ears, turn on the music, and off you go. It requires some setup, which could potentially be, which is certainly a different experience. Not necessarily a confusing experience, but it's a different experience. And is there this problem of, do you sense this problem of getting bad feedback I mean, just because it requires some work that maybe someone hasn't understood or something like that.
It's interesting that you ask that question because, like, we have had a lot of people, especially our backers, who weren't able to, like, we have sent the product to them, but they didn't know how to use it. Mm. Like, you know, they have never, we have never been with them to show them how to use it. So they have done everything on their own. And all the time, any feedback that we have got is like, you know, these are the best piece of equipment we've got. So
of course you're
going to
say that.
It's really, it's really interesting because as you mentioned it, we were also a little bit like, you know, skeptic, like, you know, how things might happen. But first of all, the app is really good. Like, it just takes you through all the steps. So really, it's pretty user-friendly. And the test is done automatic, which is the most important part of the neurophone, adjusting to your hearing. So that basically takes out mostly any problems that might occur. Mm. So you don't have to answer any questions. You don't have to interact with it. You just sit there and it does the test for you.
Well, a good onboarding process. I mean, I've worked a lot of my kind of other side of my career in things like developer documentation and developer relations and things like that for technical products. And these are also complex, very flexible tools. And onboarding people correctly is a big challenge.
No, I agree.
Also, like, have there been any challenges with either, you know, music that is very heavily compressed at source, like radio-friendly kind of pop hits that are very heavily compressed when they're produced, or, you know, very poor quality music like MP3s and things that are very heavily compressed at delivery? You know, have you come across certain musical profiles that are harder to make sound better in some respects?
So basically, when you listen to any music, it would sound better on neurophones.
Okay.
But obviously, if your source is not good enough, you're not receiving the best experience. Mm. So we do recommend people to listen to good quality music, of course, all the time. But still, if you're listening to MP3s, it would sound much better on a neurophone than it would sound on any other headphones. So you're like, neurophones cannot add to the music, obviously. Yeah. They cannot really put in anything more into the content that is already there, but they would make everything sound better to your ears. Because basically, as I said, it's a matter of maximizing the information that goes from the source to your brain.
Mm.
So if that information is enhanced, your brain would enjoy whatever is receiving more.
And so how does this process work? You have, firstly, you support iOS, Android, and desktops as well? Or?
So basically, you need the app, which is available on for the iOS and Android platforms. You download the app, you run the test, and basically that test creates a profile for you.
But it's only on phones at the moment. I can't use this on a stereo or on a computer.
You can. So you create you need the app to create your profile.
Right. Okay.
Once the profile is created, it's stored on the headphones, and then you can use your headphone to connect it to everything. And we have all the, so it's Bluetooth mainly, and we think a lot of people would use them Bluetooth, but we have all the cable connections to anything analog, micro USB, USB-C, or the normal USB.
So, so when you're actually listening to music, the app isn't intervening in any way. It's just for setting up the headphones, and then it's just the normal kind of process.
Yep.
Okay, that makes life a lot easier around all the various inconsistencies in platforms and things.
Yeah.
I mean, I know from my own personal experiences that, like, audio on Android is a major pain in the ass.
We have had people have had problems with Androids.
Because it very much depends. Like, actually, when I was trying to get an analog microphone, for this phone, and with Apple devices, of course, you know what the interface into the headphone jack is.
Mm-hmm.
With Android devices, not only can it vary wildly, you can't even find the information out. So I bought a lapel mic that had a certain configuration, and I just had to plug it in and see what happened, and it didn't work, unfortunately. But there's no way to find this stuff out. And apparently even device to device in the same model can vary.
Oh.
So it's a real pain. So I guess at the moment, your most immediate priority is fulfilling the backers, or is that done?
So all of them would be done before Christmas, okay. And we have also sold more than what we, like, you know,
okay.
What we had on the Kickstarter. We have sold that for 2017.
Okay.
But
there's not much of it left.
But you can, if you order them now, you can have them by Q1 2018.
Okay.
And it would be like, when I say Q1, it's definitely before Feb.
Okay. And then, so what's next? What's on the roadmap after that?
Well, we definitely need to sell a lot more of the Neurophones, because we really want everyone to enjoy the music through Neurophone.
Mm-hmm.
We truly believe that as soon as you listen to them, and this has been as our experience when we showed it around the world in the past 6 weeks, that as soon as people put them on, they want to own them.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the difference is huge, and I think we all believe that music is the universal language that connects everyone.
Along with food and certain other activities. But
exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely something that people really enjoy in their lifetime. And we want to give them that enjoyment of music as a really true experience, exactly how most of the artists feel it. And they create it with that passion.
Okay. So I guess during Q1 and after Q1 is mostly going to be marketing efforts and things
Like that. But also we are, like, you know, as I said before, we will definitely be going around the world again.
Okay.
Having our own pop-up stores. It was a really good success for us touring around the world with Neurophones. This was mainly exclusive events for our backers and, like, you know, some of the friends or the families if they wanted to bring people along. We also partnered with Pitchfork.
Okay.
In Paris and Ableton Loop in Berlin to showcase Neurophones to the people who love music. But we are thinking about doing the same things again next year with other music festivals or, like, you know, other music related or tech related partners and exhibitions.
Did you actually find any kind of differences between audiences? Like, were people in Europe somewhat more skeptical about the idea versus other?
I really can't say, like, you know, everywhere you go, you always get people who are more skeptical about the idea or about how good they would sound. And that's completely understandable, because there has been so much marketing before that has promised people the best sound or the best music.
Yeah, sure.
But they have never actually really put customer into that equation. And we are... in the music, at least industry, we are the first company that are putting the customer into that relation, saying everyone hears differently. And if you don't understand how people hear music, how can you say you're producing the best sound for them? Those are the people that are listening to your music. So you should be basically understanding their perspective.
Mm.
And so people come along and they don't believe it.
Yeah.
And they don't believe that it will sound good. But then
it'll work for them.
Of course. And then as soon as they put it on, like, almost everywhere around the world that we have in, people just fall in love with them.
And so just you're based in Melbourne, in Australia. In fact, you're based in Brunswick, about a block from where I used to live, in a building that I remember when it closed down. It's kind of interesting to be back here again. And it actually probably doesn't look too different. Because it used to be a clothing.
Yeah, we haven't changed. Yeah, we haven't changed much. Like, you know.
But what's it like running a startup in Australia? I mean, there's a lot of ideas here. There's a lot of innovation. There's a lot of very dedicated people. But it's also, unless it's changed in my absence, I know that, like, tax and government things are not necessarily ideal for that. And it's also expensive here as opposed to some other cities around the world. So how have you found actually running a startup, and especially a hardware startup in Australia?
Yeah, definitely a hardware startup in Australia is something rare.
Yeah.
It hasn't been around much. So we are one of the, again, pioneers in that too. But we believe that Australia and also the government is thinking at least towards the direction that
changing,
startup and tech,
slowly.
especially hardware tech, is very important. And I think there is movement especially looking at the, all the accelerator programs that the government is funding, which are really helping all the students. And as you mentioned, Australia has got a really good pool of talent.
You tend to leave, this is the thing.
Which hopefully now would decide to stay here and sort of help the, both the economy of the country, which would be growing really quickly if the government also helps.
It's actually the interesting thing when you talk about hardware, because in my memory, Australian manufacturing, contrary to what it is in a lot of other countries, actually sort of finished up relatively recently. There were still a lot of factories when I first moved here, and people I knew working in them, and it was actually a reasonably paid job, and a lot of them started closing only in the past sort of 5 to 10 years. And for example, yesterday I was in Geelong, where there was a huge Ford factory, which only now are they starting to replace those jobs. And of course you can't, I don't think you can really compete with the scale of jobs in a Ford factory, but you can take people who are well used to working with precision machinery and like it used to be with Nokia in Finland, and then suddenly all these electronics engineers were available and able to work on new ideas and have an influx of potential talent.
So we're really hoping that as we grow, Nurok grows, we would be able to employ more Australian talents, and we would definitely be thinking about bringing some part of manufacturing into Australia as well. Again, it sort of depends on how much the government would be willing to help us in that. But we definitely think about that Australia is a great country and it has a lot of potential. It just hasn't been used yet. I'm really looking forward to it.
Maybe. So, just in summary, what would be let's start. What would be your top three bits of advice for anyone starting a hardware project?
Ooh.
Well, top one.
That's a really hard question to answer. Dedication, for sure. I mean, it would be hard life, so you really have to be dedicated to the idea, especially with hardware. There would be so many challenges that you haven't thought about, and you basically would come into big walls when you're doing hardware. So dedication is a must. Some sort of belief in yourself. And because especially when you're doing hardware, when Neuro started and it was it's a headphone, basically that industry is in the music industry and headphones, although the next generation of headphones. But a lot of people would tell you that you're doing things wrong. And this is not the way to do it. And you shouldn't be doing this. Or there's no way that this could be done. Or that other people have tried and have failed. So believe in yourself and in your idea. If you think something, if you believe in that, obviously you should know the science. But if you know the science and if you know the engineering and if you know something will work, believe in yourself and just keep doing it. Everyone else would always praise you later. But with Neurophones, we have come up with so many different challenges, and so many different challenges have been solved that were never even thought that these could be solved in the industry.
And for anyone, the same question for anyone wanting to start a new idea in Australia, or would it be kind of the same responses?
I think it would be at least these two things would be sort of worldwide. In Australia, you might just need a bit more, support from the people that you know. Keep your relationships really good with the people around you, because they would really help you when you need
it. And it's a smaller community. So, if you upset someone, it has a bigger impact.
Agree. Cool. Or, it could be actually a much bigger impact if they help you.
Excellent. So how can people find out more about Neurophone?
They can go to our website, www.neurophone.com. We have all the information there about the Neurophones. We have a really lovely customer service team. You can always contact them at info@neurophone.com. If you have any questions, You can also follow us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter account. They're all @neurosound.